Wow. I want y'all to know who Bob. I want y'all to know when y'all heard saw me wear the shirt. Have you been bobbed? That's Bob Dressman, and Bob Dressman is one of my best friends in the world. He is a phenomenal real estate investor, great lender. There's really nothing he doesn't know. I love Bob. I love talking to Bob. I love being around Bob. Bob is better at asking questions than anybody I think I've ever met because he does it. I'm more of this, right? I come at you. Bob works it around where when he's talking to someone, I sit back in amazement because I don't know where he's going to go. I don't know what he's trying to get to. But when he gets there, you're absolutely, you know, you're amazed by what he pulls out of people. And it's just, it's if you ever get a chance to sit down and talk to Bob, and I would say, you know, hey, Bob, can we sit and talk? And I want to talk to you about my goals. He is phenomenal. I will tell you, as he talks to you, he contorts. So the whole time Bob talks to you, he starts off, you can see him right now, he's even contorting now. But he'll sit there and his arms go around and he just sits like this. And he's doing this kind of the whole time. Hey. Yeah. I dropped everything. This girl, what's your name? Michaela is coming to your class. That's my, you're not? I hear she likes you. She didn't say it. She didn't say it. But I looked at her when you walked in, and I saw the look, and she's like, ooh. I'll just say, here's Bill.
Well, I've got some other things I need to say.
Okay, go ahead. You're up.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 35th annual OREA National Real Estate Summit. Yeah. Let's see if we can make somebody happy right now. We're going to give away a door prize at each session to make sure that people get to their seats on time. So if anyone would be interested in winning this beautiful $100 Visa gift card donated by one of our vendors at Equity Trust Company.
Thank you.
Now, I don't get to do too many introductions this year. For anybody who doesn't know me, my name is John Jones. I'm the bookstore guy, so I'm the one who's got the coffee. But also, I work at the bookstore along with Matt Adams, and we're your education consultants. We're here to answer any questions you may have about the different programs that you hear about this weekend. And so,
what you mean by that is if someone has listened to a speaker and they're like, you know, should I go this, you know, should I get this, should I not get this, what this is like, you understand what the programs really are and maybe if it's a good fit or not, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the job, is for us to help you find something that's going to work for you. So what I've decided to do to give this door prize away is let's see whose birthday in the room is closest to mine. Anybody here have a July birthday? All right, so early July? Late July? How about late June birthdays? Late June? Okay, my birthday is July the 8th, so June 26th? June 19th? What about you, July birthdays? 23rd? 19th? Huh? I'm not. You never ask a man his age. I think June 26th is our winner. $100 gift card courtesy of one of our great sponsors, Equity Trust Company. Speaking of our sponsors, we have sponsor lunches going on today and tomorrow and Sunday. The lunches start at noon. Some of our sponsors are buying lunch for the attendees who visit their booth to get a ticket. So you want to check your updated schedule, see which vendors have sessions that day, visit their table and ask for one, and make sure you attend because each sponsor only has 50 tickets.
Your brother just stuck his head.
Get you a free lunch and
your
hear a presentation on how our sponsors can build your business.
Your brother.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's that? The lunches are going to be held in the various meeting rooms, same meeting rooms. So we're going to do 2 to 3 lunches per day. So tonight at 7:30, we're going to have a great opportunity for you to get even more information from our incredible group of experts. It's our annual Q&A panel, and it's where you can ask questions about the best strategies for 2022, where the market's going, whatever you want to ask. So we hope to see you there. We still have tickets available for tomorrow night's networking banquet, and you really want to be there to build more connections with your fellow attendees, or maybe you just want to be there because three people are going to have a chance to play the real estate match game hosted by me and maybe walk away with $1,000 cash. Tickets for the banquet are $50, and you can get them at the front desk until they're gone. They will sell out. Let's all make an extra effort to personally thank the hardworking hotel staff this weekend. They're all doing double duty right now to make sure we have a great experience. And as we know, all hotels and businesses are short-staffed right now. So let's also be nice and follow the masking policy, which is if you walk into the hotel section of the building, you do need to wear your masks. And now for our featured speaker.
Just say Bill. Here's Bill. Please, don't do all that.
Here's Bill.
Thank you. Okay, so the reason why I don't like introductions is real simple. I've watched people get, you know, use 5 minutes on an introduction, and really in about 5 minutes you'll know whether I know what I'm talking about or not, or whether this is for you or not. And if it's not, please don't feel bad if you want to get up and go see one of the other speakers. There's a lot of good speakers here this weekend, and you want to see as many as you can. You guys are leading your own group on Saturday and Sunday, right? You're doing your own class for young real estate investors. And what is the top age that people can attend?
I don't think there really is a top age, but somewhere in the 20s is, I think, the suggested.
Just so you know, I know there's a 61-year-old who wants to stop in and watch you guys. I won't tell you who, it'll be a surprise, but I'm pretty sure there's a guy that wants to do that. Okay. Ma'am? Do they have a face? No, I don't have their pictures. However, I did, what is your name, Trevor?
Devin.
Yeah, I did buy Devin's book last year and read it. In fact, I think I sent you an email or a card or something in the mail probably about 2 months ago. And then I passed that on to a friend of mine named McKenna Dombeck, who's 15, who's working on her second deal. So if you think that you can't do a deal because of your age, too young, too old, too fat, too skinny, too black, too white, to whatever you want to have in your head, nothing stops you but you. You're the only one who gives you permission. Yep, that is absolutely the truth. Can I get everybody who served in the military, please stand? Thank you very much. The best part about the country is the freedom, and I'm an Army brat, so I was raised up around the world. Didn't speak English until I was about almost 7. And there's a lot of hardship that goes along with being in the military for both the people who are serving and their families. And when you see them stand up, you know, buy their meal, get them something from the restaurant, do whatever you can, shake their hand, because it's very important what they did. And we're able to do and be where we are because of them. Please ask questions. This isn't meant for you to be quiet, because if you don't ask questions, I'm going to ask you questions. And I just pick people at random, and I pace the entire time. So if you think I'm going to just be up here, you're wrong. I circle the room as I speak, so be ready for that. So today we're going to talk about the magic of options. And this is a different topic only because almost nobody knows what options are or what they do. So options are the most creative, most underutilized deal structuring tool out there. People just don't use it. It's a phenomenal structure that lets you make impossible deals possible. It lets you do deals that no one else can do, but almost nobody knows how to use it. Who in here has done an option? I don't mean a lease option. I mean done an option by themselves. Raise your hand high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I got about 6 guys in here, so this is good, and they're all older. That's good. I mean, this is something that you had to see for a while. Bless you. COVID. You're good. No. No, I ran for the injection. My wife won't take it because she had it. She's like, I got the antibodies, and I went running for it. I'm 60 years old and is like overweight. Give me that shot. Anyway, so some of you have done pure options, most of you have not, and this is what we found. Dyke Spotiford and Pete Fortunato and I did something called Captains of the Deal Cruise, where we took 200 investors out every year, and we did this for 8 years. 2020 happened to be the last time. We docked on March the 12th. Our ship arrived, and the two ships behind us got turned away. Talk about just in time. That was just, you know, and I told everybody that was on our cruise, I said, if you sneeze or you get sick, you do not have flu-like symptoms. You have allergy-like symptoms. And we stuck by that the entire time. But on the cruise with these 200 investors, because this is for players, and on average, when asked of the people how many properties are controlled, how many doors are owned by the group, about somewhere between 5,000 and 5,500. That's a lot of properties, right, for 200 people. Then the next question I ask is how many notes are owned or controlled by the group? Over 2,000. And then the third question we asked was, how many options are held? It was always about 115. What a drop-off. So that means that almost all of these people in the room are not using options. And when you looked at the numbers of who actually had options, we asked people, how many each do you have? Most of those options, the 115, are controlled by me and Pete. So if you take those options out, the number was like 20. Not even 20, I think. It was like, anyway, there just wasn't many in there. So I want you all to watch how the tool can be used and what it is and why it works. And consider learning about this because it's going to help you do deals that no one else can go do. So first of all, what's in most investors' creative deal structuring toolbox? So if you opened up their toolbox, what would you find? Owner financing? Rehabs? Rentals? 70 cents on the dollar offer. What he's talking about is the big damn hammer. What tool most investors since 2012 have used is called the big damn hammer. What is that? It's when Anita. How many people saw me with Anita's shirt on last night? It's so good to have you here, sweetheart. Okay. So it's the big damn hammer. And what that means is when someone calls you up or they need to get a house sold, what you do is you do what almost everybody this has been taught since 2012, which is 70 cents on the dollar minus expenses. That's it. And so if someone says, hey, listen, I need to sell my house, you say 70 cents on the dollar offer. Wham, the big hammer. Someone says, I'm getting a divorce, I've got to sell. Wham, 70 cents on the dollar. We just had twins and the house is too small. We need to sell it to get to a bigger house. Wham, 70 cents on the dollar. And this is the tool that's used for every possible transaction. In other words, there's just one tool in the toolbox. But here's the question. What happens if somebody wants more than 70 cents on the dollar minus expenses? If you only have the big damn hammer in your toolbox, can you complete that deal? No. Talk to me. No. No, you can't. And so you walk past that. But what if you could pay full market for the house? Do you see where you can do deals that other people can't? What if you could pay 20 or 30% above fair market value? Who is in? Anybody in here been door knocking with me? Okay, you have. When we went out, because usually I do this. Do I make any offers in the range of $1 million to $1 trillion? So when I go out, I'll make at least one offer for a house. Somewhere between $1 million to $1 trillion to $10 trillion. I let the group decide. And I'll go as high as I possibly can because most people are terrified of price. But one of the things I want you to remember is with real estate investing, when you're making an offer, think of a teeter-totter. So on the first seat, you have price. On the second seat, you have terms. There's two seats. And so when someone comes and says, I want to have $200,000 for my house, they're asking for price. The answer always is yes. But what seat do I get? How will I pay them? What if someone comes to me and says, I need all cash? What do I say? Yes. Because cash is how will I be paid. So the answer is yes, I'll pay you all cash. But what seat do I get? I get the price. I get to name the price. What if someone says, I want my price and I want terms? There's only two seats. They took both of them. I'm out. So that's really how you have to look at deal structuring, which is I'll look at someone and say, and I'll use that analogy with them, the teeter-totter. And a lot of my offers, I call them teeter-totter offers. I'll make them a price offer, I'll make them a terms offer. But on the terms offer, I'll give you as much as you want. A trillion? 10 trillion? Let's go do that. But as long as I can make the property cash flow. When I was 19, I put myself through college selling vacuums door to door. And of the deals you see up here today, almost everything came from door knocking. So since I was 12 years old, I've made my living knocking on people's doors, being invited in. And that's how I've made my, since I was 12. It's all I've ever done. My mother did that for 28 years. She sold Electrolux vacuums door to door for 28 years. So since I was 8, this is what I've been listening to and grew up with. So that's my normal in my household. So with door knocking, people always ask, you know, I always hear, you're going to get shot. The door is going to get slammed in your face. It's not going to work very well. People are going to yell at you. You're going to get arrested. So I sold Electrolux vacuums to put myself through college. And then I stayed with them when I graduated. I was supposed to get a job with the company Anita is going to retire from soon, which was Procter & Gamble. So when I was supposed to work in the Dolly Partons, so I was very excited about that, Anita. Again, I can't wait for you to retire. This is going to be so much fun. I'm thinking Thanksgiving. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, Procter & Gamble. Oh, anyway, I stayed with Electrolux because I could make so much more money selling vacuums door to door with Electrolux. So I just stayed with them for 18 years. But the thing was, so 18 years, I'm selling vacuums. I'm working all across the country. 18 years were, so I want you to picture you open your door. I'm in your yard. I've got an Electrolux vacuum under my arm. You have that picture? There I am, selling. Vacuum under my arm. How many doors got slammed in my face? I want you to try to guess how many doors got slammed in my face over the course of 18 years. Try. How many?
Zero.
7. Most people say thousands. 7. Do y'all know John Burley?
Yep.
John Burley's here. John Burley's teaching. Do you know what he did for over a decade? He sold vacuums door to door. We're going to be on a panel, I think, Saturday night together. Really good guy, but to have two guys who door knock and we have the same experiences from the door knocking. People are kind and people are nice and people will help you. When it's raining, they'll give you an umbrella or a towel. When it's hot, they'll give you water. When you need something, they're more than happy to help. So that's the reality of what it's like. Anybody in here ever been to a yard sale? You've been to a yard sale? What's your name in the orange?
Larry,
okay, because you asked me the question about door knocking, right?
Yes.
Okay, so when you were at the yard sale, first of all, how did you find it?
Driving around.
Come on, come up here for a second. Okay, so you were driving around.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're driving.
Yeah.
Here you go. I'm in your car next to you. What? We're not in England. Here you go. Here you go. You're driving. We're in the car. Okay, so you see a sign. What do you do? What type of sign do you see?
Yard sale.
Sale!
Yeah.
It says sale on it. Okay, good. Okay, so you see yard sale. Go ahead. What do you do?
Pulls
over. He stops his car. Then what?
Get out.
He opens the door to his car. And then what? You're out?
Yeah, walk.
You walk. So you're trespassing on their property as you walk down the driveway, right? So you're trespassing on their property, and you see the people down there, and they're down there like where the back table is with people, and they have stuff. And when they see you, what do they say? Hi! And what do you say?
Hi!
And that's what door knocking is like. It's the same thing. Okay? Thank you. Appreciate it, Larry. Give him a hand. On top of everything else, God wants you to door knock. Matthew 7:7. Anybody know what Matthew 7:7 says? Knock and the door shall be opened. It's biblical. God will never lead you astray. Okay. So I'm 19 years old. I'm going into my sophomore year of college, and I'm not doing very well because I'm not a good salesperson. I can't, you know, those people that can just turn the screen. I'm not that guy. I can't do it. So I'm 19 years old. I'm not doing well. It looks like I'm going to have to quit college. And I'm going to go into the, I was an Army brat, so I was going to go into the Army and fly helicopters like my dad did. And my mother brought me home a tape series by a guy named Zig Ziglar. And when I listened to the tape series, he said one thing that changed my life and changed everything for my business life. This was the most important business lesson I ever learned. And what Zig said was, you'll get everything you want in life if you just help enough other people get what they want. It's about them, not you. Just so you know, I'm bringing Anita to tears. I see her over there. She's got the tissue up to her eyes because she gets so emotional when I speak. It's phenomenal. And so I have had, as I talk tonight, I've had three speakers, three teachers in my life. So when you hear me talk, some of the stuff came from what I've learned and my experiences, but I could not have been here without these three men. The first is Jack Miller. When it comes to options, he is the guy. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2009, but he is the one that developed all the things that you see. All of us that use options, this is where it came from. The other one is Pete Fortunato. He's here. Best creative deal structure you'll meet. Make sure you get around him as much as you can. And the third is Dykes Bodiford. So I went to Jack and Pete for offense. I went to Dykes Bodiford for defense, to understand LLCs and corporations and trusts, you know, that sort of thing. So Dykes was my defense. They were my offense. So I can't be here without them. So here's what most investors know about options. Lease option, lease option, lease option, lease option, lease option, lease option. In other words, like it's one word. And it's not. It's not one word. When you're dealing with lease options, there's two different agreements you're working with. One is called a lease. The other is called an option. Now, what is the lease? What type of benefits does the lease transfer? Use. So you can use the house. It gives someone the ability to go in and have, you know, be where it's warm and they have a sink and they have a bathroom and a shower and a bed and a kitchen. So a lease transfers use. Option transfers something differently. An option transfers the right to be able to purchase that house at some point in the future. A completely different thing. And the two do not go together. They're not the same document. They're two completely different documents. One does one thing, and the other does another. And mainly we're going to be talking about options. So today, we'll be on option agreements. So what is an option? The first thing you need to know is it's a right, not an obligation. What does that mean? What does a right mean? So let's just go to the first side. A right is, and you're absolutely right, you can do this. You don't have to. You know, you have different meetings. You know, you can come to this meeting, you can go to another meeting. You can come to anything you want to. You have the option to attend any class you want. An obligation is, you must be at this class. You must be here. You must do this. So that's the difference. So when you sign a purchase and sale with a seller, everything's signed. Is that an obligation or is that a right? That is an obligation. You're now contractually linked together. Yes, sir.
Does Anita have the option to retire?
I'm sorry, I just got to shake his hand.
Good to see you. Hair's looking good today.
Thank you. It's David, right?
Yes, sir.
I know him as Greenpen. I got to tell y'all something that David did. We were out door knocking several years ago, and I only use one pen. I use a blue pen. It's a Pilot G2. This is all I will use. Okay? So David, we were out door knocking, and he kept handing me a green pen and wanted me to write with a green pen. I don't write with green pens. I write with this pen. That's it. And the first half of the day, all he did was kept giving me this stinking green pen. I finally looked at him and said, David, if you offer me the green pen again, man, I'm just going to slug you because he got annoying to me. And then he, you know, we finished the day, everything went well, and he called me up with a question a couple days later, and he said, "Hey, this is David." I said, "Okay." I didn't know who he was. He goes, "The guy with the green pen." To this day, when I see him, I just think green pen. Tell me that wasn't genius what he did. He's way smarter than I am. Okay. An option is usually done with someone who wants to keep their house. As investors, we mainly talk to people who want to sell. So this is a whole different clientele. This is a whole different thing we're going to go at. So this is a tool that will maximize profit and eliminate the risk. And the reason why is, if you do a purchase and sale, if you go get a mortgage on that, if you own it, you're at total risk. But with an option, you can control the property. You can control different benefits that property brings, but you're not obligated to perform. You can perform, but you're not obligated. It's a unilateral contract, not a bilateral contract. So when you hear uni, what does that mean? One. Okay? It's one. When you hear buy, it means two. So with a bilateral contract, you're both on the hook. With a unilateral contract, the seller must perform. The seller must do what the seller promises to do, the property owner. And you may do what you want to do, but you don't have to. It's a much safer agreement. And so with the accord, what you're doing is you're pre-agreeing to what property we're talking about, what will the purchase price be, what will the terms be, and when will this happen. So you're just pre-agreeing to everything, and it may be 20 or 30 or 40 years from now before anything happens. It may be a week, but usually it's a long-term. Well, maybe it's usually a long-term thing. And the best thing about an option, it is not a loan. So if I were to, what's your name?
Jim.
So if I were to buy an option from you, Jim, and so you give me an option to buy your property one day, and let's say I give you cash. Do you understand that you never had to pay me that money back? There's no interest. There's no payments. Your debt does not go up. There's no risk to you. The deal is now done. What are you giving up? Nope.
I agree to give you cash.
You don't agree to give me any cash. You agree to give me your house. So what he's giving up is future appreciation. Does anyone know where real estate will go a year from now?
No.
We don't know. You weren't around in 2007. You weren't investing in 2007. Because in 2007, I asked the question, everybody was like, oh, it's going to skyrocket. Who was here investing in 2008, 9, 10, 11? You remember, right? Wasn't that a lot of fun? Wow. Every day you got up was a new world. Okay. A pure option, and you'll hear me use that phrase a lot, just means no lease is involved. No purchase and sale is involved. I'm just buying the right to buy the property at some point in the future. And as you watch the different deals, I'll show you examples of the deals in action. Watch what the option can do. So I'm going to give you an example. This is Cox Farm. This is a deal we did a few years ago. This is my buddy Houston, who is a germphobe. This is in 2013, before there was ever COVID. He used to ride around with those stinking Pirells in his car. He was always wiping his hands with these things. And so when COVID happened, he was ready years ahead of time. So we were out door knocking in 2013, and I got a call from a homeowner who said, I've got a property. It's been a rental. I want to get rid of it. I never want to have a tenant ever again in my lifetime. Will you come buy it? I've had two or three or four investors tell me to talk to you. They couldn't help me. So I said, okay. So we turned the car around because I work a five-mile circle around the Cartersville, Georgia Walmart. So if y'all think you have to have 15 states you have to work in, a five-mile circle around the Cartersville, Georgia Walmart. Cartersville has a population of about 25,000. That's it. So you don't have to have a really, really big area. Okay, so I headed over that way, and as we turned onto his road, onto the Cox Farm, Houston started laughing. I said, what's so funny? And he said, I was here 2 weeks ago. I met with this guy. There's no deal here. He's badly upside down. and it has severe negative cash flow. Y'all come in and get seats. There's chairs. Then there's bad negative cash flow. There's no deal here. I also will tell you that the whole time I knew Houston, I kept saying, come to Jack's seminars with me. Come to Pete's seminars with me. Come to Dykes' seminars with me. And he always said, I don't have time. I can't do that. I don't have time. So he didn't get the education that was needed. So here we are. And one of the things I found out, that he was one of the investors who told the owner to call me. He said, we can't help you here. It's upside down. No negative cash flow. But there's this guy named Bill. Call him. He may be able to do something. Because remember we talked about the toolbox? There was no equity here for him. When he opened the toolbox, he took out the hammer. He went, hammer doesn't work. Put the hammer back, closed the lid, and left. Okay, so the problem was $25,000 upside down. And it had a negative $100 cash flow every month before you looked at expenses. Who wants this deal? Nobody raises their hand. Nobody wants this deal. This incredibly great deal that's way upside down and has negative cash flow, nobody wants this deal. What a nice property. Double-wide mobile home, 5 acres, horse property, nobody wants it. So this is known as a T-bar. Sorry about the screen, evidently. However this is set up, it's just too far away. I'm scared of moving anything because it's going to collapse. Anyway, closest I can get. So this is called a T-bar. This is the most important document I use when I'm meeting with sellers, by far. This is also what my contract looks like. So on the left-hand side is me talking to the owner and getting information from the owner. And when I talked to him, he said he hated tenants. So the situation was he had bought this property for his daughter in 2005. Where was real estate in 2005? So we're now dealing, I think we're in 2011 or 2012. Where was real estate in 2000? Down here. And so he had bought this for his daughter because she loved horses. And in 2009, she went to her daddy and says, Daddy, I'm moving out. The house was in his name because she couldn't get a mortgage. I'm moving out because I fell in love with a boy. Kind of how you're feeling right now, right? Just... I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not. You're right about that. Okay, so they were upside down. Or where was I going with this thing? She threw me off. So, he hated tenants. So anyway, the daughter moved out. He put this man who has never taken a landlording class in his lifetime, and landlords are not born; they're made. You have to learn how to do this. So the landlord, as a landlord, he had his first tenant in. The tenant wrote him a security deposit and first month's rent payment with a personal check. Guess what happened to that? And the next payments never came in, so they're gone. And so he got him out after about 7 months, put in the next, and by the way, that guy caused about $11,000 to $12,000 in damage to the house. Next guy comes in, same thing. But the guy had learned how to evict, so he got him out in 3 months. So he's doing better with the eviction process. But he never wants another tenant again. He's just rehabbed to get the property again for $7,000, and he just wants done. Who in here has done a subject to deal before? Okay, so Veen and I are teaching at 3:30 today. We'll be teaching on subject to deals in whatever room we're in. So he was willing to give me the house. Leave the mortgage in place. Just let me make the mortgage payments for him. In other words, he said, yes, I'll give you the deed, take the house, take my mortgage, just make the payments, I want done. Who in here would like to have a deal like that? But remember it was upside down? Remember the negative cash flow? Remember this. It's okay to help someone out of the quicksand. It's never okay to take their place in the quicksand. So if I would have done a subject to deal here, do you see that I would have been taking his place in the quicksand? It would have been dangerous for me. So that was not the best tool to take out of the toolbox. So he's upside down, negative cash flow. He didn't want to do a short sale or a bankruptcy or foreclosure. He told me that his dad told him that when you say you're going to do something, do it. He was going to stick by the agreement as long as it took. Is this a good man? Is this a good man? This is a very good man. And I said, well, why don't you just bring the cash and go to the table, go to the closing table and just whatever you don't have, just write a check for it. And he said, I had it until I did two rehabs. Mm-hmm. And finally, he just wanted to be done. So on the other side, this is where a T-bar is really effective. You have your current position on the left-hand side. So this is me talking to him. So I'll sit down and ask him for a piece of paper. I do a T, left-hand side, current position, right-hand side, potential position. And as I'm talking to him and he tells me a problem, I just do an arrow over and I write down. All he has to do is say yes. I don't know what my offer is going to be yet, but I do know that my offer is going to solve this problem. Remember Zig? You'll get exactly what you want in life if you just help enough other people get what they want. That's what Zig had taught me. So I knew I was going to find some way to fix this because I have more than the big damn hammer in my toolbox. But whatever I offer him, if he takes it, he moves from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. So no more upside down, no more tenant problems, no more headaches. He doesn't have to worry about anything. All he has to do is say yes. Good. Always remember, sometimes the why is more important than the how much, but all you are using is a purchase and sale contract. Can y'all show me where on that contract it talks about the why? No, you cannot. Because it doesn't exist. Because all you're dealing with is dollars and cents in the money. Sometimes the why is more important than the how much. So the creative deal structure was this. First of all, I agreed to do a performance master lease. Someone please, I know we have some really good people in this room. Tell me what a performance master lease is. Yes, sir. Can you stand up and be loud? Exactly right. So I rent the property from the owner. I have the right to rent to someone else, and I pay the owner the rent. So I'm going to become his tenant, but I pay the owner only after my tenant pays me. That's what we mean by performance master lease. Master lease is really like a sandwich lease. Performance means I pay him only after. But remember the mortgage, the house would rent for $800 a month. So I made my rent $600. When I met him, he's losing $1,100 a month because of taxes and insurance and the mortgage payment and cutting the grass and the power and repairs are going to happen. When I pulled into his driveway, that's what he was losing. This way, he's losing a lot less because his mortgage payment is $900 per month. And now I'm going to be willing to pay him $600 per month. So now he's only losing $300 a month. Is that better? That's better. I also said, for me to do this, I want a 7-year option to be able to buy your property. I made a mistake here, by the way. I should have said 15 or 20 years. I didn't. I just said 7. But we're in 2012, 2013. I knew we were at the bottom. I knew at some point in time we were going to come up. Right now, I don't know where the top is, but does everybody kind of have a feeling we're somewhere up here?
Yeah.
It's not here. It's here. I don't know where. And back then, I knew we were in the trough. I didn't know when it would start up, but I knew it was going to be within the next year or two. Okay. My purchase price, and you can do this with an option, would be the then balance of the mortgage. This is very important. The then balance of the mortgage. So I want you to look at what's happening. When I meet him, his mortgage balance is here. The value of the house is here. Now, every time he makes a mortgage payment, what happens to my purchase price? I'm capturing the full amortization of his loan because every month my purchase price is dropping. But we're at the trough, and I know that we're going to get ready to take off soon. So what's going to happen to the value of this property? So let me do it for you in fast motion. We were going to go from here to here, and once we got to here, it would be safe to buy this property because it would have equity. It would have cash flow. Okay, so I had the owner agree to do a HARP. Who all was in the advanced class last night? Or yesterday? Because we talked about the HARPs, remember? And so I had him do a HARP. And a HARP was just a loan modification. And you can get loan modifications today, can you not? So you can help owners. So he didn't know what to do. I knew what to do. I didn't do it for him. I gave him the information, told him who to call. He did it himself. But I said, you do a HARP. I also found out his insurance was too high, so I had him call my insurance agent. And I said, I'll fight your property taxes for you. Because his property taxes had not come down since 2005. They had stayed, even though the values had collapsed. They had never brought down the value of his property. So how much money do I have out of pocket so far? Nope. Right? No, nothing out of my pocket. So the best part is, again, I have the right to buy. I'm not obligated. Does the option, you to get an option, you have to have option consideration, right? Does that have to be cash? It does not have to be cash. Most people don't know that. Consideration means the other person you're dealing with, or both parties, agree that what's being provided as consideration is something of value. What was I giving him? What value was I bringing to the table? The master lease. I was taking over tenants, and for that, for me doing that, he gave me the option of the property. No cash was involved. So the owner did a HARP loan, and this is about 3 months later when we got all this done. His mortgage payment, principal and interest, went from $755 down to $450. Is that significant? Watch what happened to his insurance. $1,005 down to $590. Significant? Better yet, property taxes went from $700 down to $351. And what you can't see here is the owner went from losing $1,100 when Houston and I pulled into that driveway, he went to making $70 a month. Was he appreciative? So you see the benefit he's going to get. All the other investors had walked away saying upside down, no cash flow. And if we do have a turn, you're going to see that some more. And you're going to run into people nowadays that have borrowed too much against their house, and you're going to see that or need to sell fast. So don't, just because there's no cash flow or there's no equity or there's no both, that doesn't mean you don't go talk with them and meet with them and try to help. So I rented the property to a good tenant, $800 a month. I agreed to pay rent of $600 a month, but only after I received the payment from the tenant who I put in. I increased my mailbox money by $200 a month. That's what was in it for me, so I had an option, but I'm now making $200 per month more. I told the owner of the property that we'd be responsible for the first $50 each month in repairs, and then in the lease to my tenant, I said they're responsible for the first $50 every month in repairs. Okay, so they're going to take care of that, and it's going to be a seven-year option, so I'm capturing all the amortization, and I'm capturing all the appreciation. So that, remember when we did this? So both of those are mine. So lessons learned. Why did the other investors walk? Someone tell me. All they had was a big damn hammer. They didn't know how to structure. They didn't speak the language of creative deal structuring. This is why this is so important. That means they weren't able to help this very good man. You want more tools in the toolbox so you can help people. It's not about the money. It's about helping. What was our financial risk in all this? Nothing. I talked to you why we didn't do a 72 deal. So all I did is the option, instead of time working against me, it allowed time to work for me. What if real estate hadn't come back? How much money did I have in the deal? What was going to be my loss? What if I couldn't have found a tenant? What if tenants had collapsed or rents had collapsed? I was still very safe. And knowing how to do a loan modification played a key role. Understand that there's people out there that are hurting. They've been laid off from work, or they're behind on the bills, or for whatever reason, they can't get inventory in, and they can't sell the product they need to sell. Whatever's going on here, there's people who cannot pay their mortgage payment. And they need help. And one of the things you can do is you can understand how to do loan modifications. And in helping someone, that also leads you into being able to get an option back to buy the property for the service you provide. And to break it down to the simple, every day my job is to go out and find people to help and problems to solve. And if you're not where you need to be, if you're not accomplishing what you want to accomplish, all you have to do is go find more people to help. Find more problems to solve. And all this is a zig. You'll get exactly what you want in life if you just help enough other people get what they want. Yes, ma'am. Okay, say it again.
So, I have a property I'm looking at, but each one of the units
needs a lot of work.
They need work to, for me to get rents where they should be versus
bless you.
Where they are. Bless you. Versus where they are. So is it possible to do rehab work when you're inside of a lease option or a master lease or whatever? Is it possible to do that without...
Your question is, what if I have an option and I go to exercise my option, they say no? Is that what you're asking?
Essentially, and you put the work in. So how do you protect yourself?
Hang on. I'm going to get there. So what if the owner reneges? You secure the option using a mortgage if you're in a mortgage state or a deed of trust if you're in a deed of trust state. Again, almost nobody in here has ever done this. And this is something I learned from Pete, and thank God for Pete. Because I used to record a memorandum of option, which does not go in the chain of title. You can close over the top of that. But I learned that a mortgage or a deed of trust, depending on which state you're in, secures a promise. Now, most people see it secure a note, a promissory note. So when you borrow from Bank of America to go buy a house, they'll use a mortgage or a deed of trust to secure that promise, right? Almost everybody thinks all a mortgage or deed of trust does is secure a promissory note. It doesn't. It secures a promise. Is an option a promise?
Yes.
Yes. Is a purchase and sale a promise? Yes. Is a lease a promise? Yes. You can record and secure and put in chain of title many different types of promises. Okay, so let's say we've gone, you've done your rehab, right? And it's been 4 years, and you're ready to exercise your option. And you go to them, and the house is much nicer now. And you sit back and say, I'm ready to exercise my option. And they'll go by and look at the property and went, you've done a fine job. I'm not going to sell you the property. Let's use a different way. You go to Bank of America. You borrow $100,000 to buy a property. And you promise to make payments back, right? And 4 years have gone by, and you say, you know, I know I made a promise and I borrowed the money, but I've decided I'm not going to pay you anymore. What can the lender do? Well, they'll call the note due first. If the bank doesn't get the money they loaned, then they will foreclose because the collateral for the promise was what? The house. This is the same thing. So if you sit back and you have this option and it's secure to the property, you're ready to exercise it, and they say no, you call the option due, and then you foreclose. Simple as that. And anything junior to an option is wiped away at foreclosure, and anything senior stays. Okay. If you had a mortgage with Bank of America and you decided, I don't want to abide by my promise that I gave them, the lender, because you're not agreeing to your promise, can foreclose and take the property because the property is the collateral for the promise. If you have an option with someone and they don't want to sell you the property, then you have the right to foreclose because the promise is not being met and the house is the collateral for the promise. Whether it's an option, whether it's a note, it's the same thing. It's a promise.
So I would have the option to foreclose on them.
Yes.
Well,
yes. Yes, but you will be the owner when you're done. So a bank takes a property to sale. They don't own it, but they take the property to an auction. And they can no-sale it if they choose to. Or they can sell it to the highest bidder if they choose to. So you may decide to take it to the courthouse steps and just have it sold and you get cash. Or you can sit back and say, you know, I don't want to sell the house. But that's how you secure this. In most states, is a rush to record state. So you look at the date that is recorded and the timestamp. You'll see one of those in just a second. Someone else had a question back here? Yes, sir.
So if you, in the deal that you did, there was a mortgage already in front of you.
There was a mortgage already in front of me.
You record your option, you're now in second place.
So I record the option, I'm in second place.
So you can foreclose if he doesn't agree to.
I can foreclose, yes.
So you're still stuck behind the
I can foreclose from second position, but because I'm in second position, that means I really take over the first subject to. It turns into a subject to deal because I'm allowed to make the payments on a senior mortgage. Any second lender can make the payments on the first mortgage lender.
Even if in this particular case you're not technically a lender.
I'm not a lender. It secures a promise. Take out the word lender and think the promisor and promisee.
Okay, but you still get all the rights of an actual lender.
Yes. It's not the rights of a lender. I get the rights of the mortgage, what's in the mortgage, or what the rights are in the deed of trust.
Okay.
That's what I get.
So they can't use a due on sale clause on you from the first position?
The first can't use a due on sale because what I'm doing is I'm foreclosing from the point of view of someone who's secured by to the property.
Got it. Okay.
Yes, sir. How am I protected? The seller stops paying their mortgage. Okay, we're getting deeper than I wanted to get because I wanted this to be overview, but let's hit this. If they don't pay their mortgage and they go to foreclosure, I'm junior, I'm wiped out. Just like the second lender, a third lender, someone who has a lien against the property that's junior, we're all going to get wiped out. So I watched the foreclosure paper. And I will tell you, I've been doing options since 99-ish. And I've never had that happen. What about getting a limited power of attorney assigned? And yes, I do that. Well, actually, I don't do a limited power of attorney with when I'm doing an option. When I do a subject to deal, I do get a limited power of attorney. But when I'm doing an option, I don't because one of the things you'll see up here is if I'm meeting with someone and the hair on the back of my neck stands up, there's no way I'm doing the deal. I don't care how good the deal is. I'm not doing the deal. I got to like the person I'm dealing with. And everybody in here that knows me knows I will do a deal because of the story. I don't deal the deal because of the money. Because I really enjoy the story. Like this one. Okay, let me keep moving forward, guys. Because I don't want to... I want to make sure I can give you everything I've got. So who will give you an option? These are the people who give you an option. Someone who needs or wants to stay in their house. Now, the example you just saw was someone who does not want the house. They want to get rid of it, but I don't want to buy it. So it's someone that they want to stay in their house. How about someone who wants to buy your home? You can use an option there, too. You're about to see that. An investor who needs know-how. This is how I do most of my option work these days. So when I was out door knocking and I came across a deal, which happened about one every 40th or 50th offer I made, I would be in it with a group and I would get someone that agreed to owner financing, let's say. And let's say it's in Wichita, Kansas. Well, I don't want to own a house in Wichita, Kansas. But I would go to a seasoned investor who lived there and I'll let them buy the property. I already had owner financing built into it. I'd already structured the deal. The offer were good to go. And so he would buy the property. He would take care of it. He'd get the tax benefits of it. It was his house. But at closing, he gave me an option for maybe some of the monthly, maybe some of the upside, maybe some of both. That's something we would talk through. And I looked and said, what do you want? What's more important to you? Do you need the monthly? So if they're your age, they wanted the monthly. If I asked someone that was more our age, it was, I want the upside, right? So you don't need the monthly. And so I just find out what the other person wants, and I take what's left over. Yes. Many times. There's whenever someone says always or never, and someone says here's the way, there's no the way. Everybody in here does deals differently. Everybody. That proves there's no the way. There's just a way. There's your way. Your way matters and it's going to continually change. I've done a number of times where I've sold a $170,000 house for $100,000 because I had $100,000 in it. That's what I bought it for. That was my total rehab, and I found someone I liked, and I would put them in the house. I would sell it to them, so that's what they could afford. But I would get an option for all the upside one day when it did sell. So all I was doing was going to just gather in the appreciation. So I had no tax hit because I had $100,000 in, sold it for $100,000. They went and got a mortgage, and then behind the mortgage, I secured my option, and then years later, I can exercise. Tired landlords who hate tenants. You just saw that with Cox Farm. And an owner who needs to sell, that's called a tactical option, just doesn't want to use realtors. I've only done that maybe 3 or 4 times in my life, but it is out there. Okay, so those of you that have seen this deal, please don't lead under the ones who have not, who's not seen our ranch that we sold? Has not seen? Raise your hand. Good. Okay. So this is our ranch we sold in 2018. And with this ranch, the value of it was $505,000, 34 acres, four bedroom, three bath, ranch, outbuildings, beautiful grass, beautiful. It was gorgeous, just absolutely gorgeous in Adairsville, Georgia. We put it on the market with a realtor, $497,900, worth $505,000. Is that a fair asking price? Yes, it is. So I also told my realtor we would take, we'd sell it on time. Because remember we talked about the teeter-totter? So if I was willing to give someone terms, I got to name the price so we could sell it for $575,000. Okay, so I'd also sell it for $575,000. Or I said I will trade it for something that I like better. Okay, maybe storage buildings, maybe something we like better. Or I would take $300,000 cash. So who has not seen this before? Okay, you have not seen this. So of these four offers, what would you take? You can only pick one.
Why do you have two different cash things on there? That's my
idea. Because I do. Which one would you take?
Probably the $300,000.
How come? You don't know.
Because it's significantly lower than the others, especially if I can get private financing for that.
Okay. How many people in here would have said the $497,000? Raise your hand. How many people would have said $575,000? Raise your hand. How many people said trade? How many people said $300,000? Very few of you. I want to show you this deal. My wife loved this home, and she gave me the marching orders. I found the people I want to buy my home. It wasn't our home anymore. I found the people I want to buy my home. And I want you to structure the deal accordingly, and I don't care if we make a dollar a year. I want these people to buy my home. So that's the parameters I'm giving. And so I went to them, I met with them at the house, and I said, can you do the $500,000? And they said, no, we can't. We went to the mortgage lender. We tried. We can't. We want to do a contingency contract. Who can tell me what a contingency contract is? What is a contingency contract? So we'll buy your house once our house sells. Does that sound something like an option?
Yeah.
That's an option agreement. We'll buy your house once our house sells, but if our house doesn't sell, we're not buying your house. I'm on the hook. That's a unilateral contract. I'm on the hook and they're not. Okay, good. So anyway, they wanted to do a contingency contract. Did I like that idea? Absolutely not. Not even a little bit. So, he did tell me that he went to try to get a loan, didn't he? And he said he couldn't get $505,000 without first selling his house. What's the next question you ask is, what can you get? And he said, I can get a $300,000 mortgage. What directions did I get from my wife? So I shook his hand and said, you're buying our house for $300,000. Congratulations. You have made a deal of a lifetime. Was he happy? Thrilled. Was my wife happy?
Yes.
Thrilled. Was I happy?
Yes.
No. Are you kidding me? I'm losing $200,000? Not a chance. So I needed to do some structuring. And I said, I'll sell you the house for $300,000. They got done celebrating, high-fiving each other. This is great. And I said, however, I want to have an option to buy the property back anytime in the next 30 years for $300,000. He goes, how does that work? I said, you're going to give me $300,000. I'm going to give you the deed to my home. And sometime in the next 30 years, I'm going to give you back your $300,000 and you're going to give me back my home. What would I have captured in that deal? All that appreciation over 30 years. Good. He didn't like that. And he said, so I had to structure that into it. He didn't like that a bit because this was his forever home. He didn't want me to take it from him. So what you can't see, it says, I said, how long will it take you to sell your house? And he said, it'll take me about 6 months. I said, I'll give you 12 months. And what I'll do is you're going to get at closing, you're going to give me an option to buy that property back for $300,000. But I won't exercise it for the first year of the option. And I'll give you an option to buy back my option for $197,900. How much money were we going to make if he exercised his option? $497,900. What was our asking price? This is the entire agreement. This is our contract. I want you all to see what my paperwork looks like. So if you think you need big documents to make this stuff work, this is it. So T-bar, left-hand side, current position. Right-hand side, potential position. What he was looking for was freedom. He wanted freedom and privacy. That's what all those things said, and I told him that. On the right-hand side, once I understood what he wanted, what his why was, it was my job to make it happen, and I didn't want to wait and have him have an option on me. I wanted to do this differently. So this is me coming up there, and we're sitting in the living room, and that's how this was done. So if you think you need lots of skill, it was just me listening and asking questions. This is the option agreement that was used to secure his promise to sell me back the house. And this got recorded in the courthouse, by the way. Yes, ma'am. I could have done it with a note.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't want to do it with a note.
Okay, okay.
I really wanted him not to pay me back. I'm 60 years old.
Okay, I got you.
I'm 60 years old. Tell me your name, because I love you.
Andrea.
I loved you in the meeting yesterday, by the way. You just rock. So, Andrea, do people our age want big chunks of cash?
No.
I wanted to be able to park this money and capture all that appreciation. I thought that would be just great. Okay, this is the deed of trust, the security instrument that was used. You can see it's being recorded in the Bartow County Courthouse. I called this a security instrument on purpose so I could use it to teach with, because that's all a mortgage is a securing instrument. That's all a deed of trust is. It's a securing instrument. It secures the promise to the property. That's what I call it. So that's me recording it. So now I'm in the courthouse. Now here's the option I gave him. It is not recorded. It's a buyback option. He can buy. He has the right to buy my option anytime in the next 12 months for $197,000. That's all that happened here. I did not record his option. I didn't want to mess up title of the property. I didn't want to deal with that. I just said, hey, you got it. Most of my deals are done with a handshake. Now, you have to understand there's the accord when you're working with someone. The accord is what you and I are agreeing to, right? Then there's the memorialization. You put it into writing what we've agreed to. That's all you're seeing here. We've already agreed to it when we're sitting in the den. So this is the memorialization. I wanted to make sure my option was secured. I know I'm going to perform, so I didn't worry about trying to secure this. I just chose not to. Don't buy my house. So why did we all agree to this creative deal structure? Everybody got what they wanted. Everybody got what they wanted. I had to use different tools to make it work, but we sold our house for $497,900. He got the house of his dreams. We both got what we wanted, but I was able to solve the problem that my wife had, that he had, that his wife had, that I had, just by putting different tools out of the toolbox. So here's some of the types of options that are out there. You have something called a strategic option. And that's what you just saw. Mine was a long-term, way out there strategic option. In other words, I'm throwing that football as far forward as I can. You also have something called a tactical option. His was more of a tactical option. It's shorter term. You know, it's condensed. It's much less time. Usually I use a tactical option when I need to, someone has a house they want me to sell for them, and I'm not a realtor, but I'll get an option on their property, and then I'll go find a buyer for the property. And then the property gets sold, and what I make is, I make whatever this option is secured to the property, which is a title flaw. So if I have a seller who says, as long as I get 70, I'm happy. And if I have a buyer who says, if I can buy this thing for 110, I'm happy. I make the difference. Forget 6% commission split two ways. I make a lot more than that. I don't do this often. I don't try to be a realtor. I don't want to do this, but every once in a while I come across someone and it makes sense. A magic option. You get an option on a property, and your IRA buys the option for $100 on Monday. And then you sell a house and make $300,000 and you stick it in your IRA on Tuesday. That's called magical. Make sure you talk to John Heyer about what a great idea that is. You're opening yourself up. Don't use magical options. A buyback option. You saw that's what I gave to Jacobus. An extension option. What you didn't see in that option is I told you that he gave me a 30-year option to buy that property. But it also said in there, there's always extension language I put into things. And what the extension language said was, if I give him $1,000, that would be applied toward the strike price, the $300,000 purchase price, I get to extend the option an additional 10 years. So what you're really looking at, because of the extension language, was a 40-year option. When someone says, Bill, we're going to put a 2-year balloon in this note that you're having to sign, I'll say, okay, I'll do the 2-year balloon. But you're going to give me an option to extend the balloon 5 additional years. I get to do that twice. So give me the balloon, but I'm going to stick a language in there where I can extend that balloon out. If someone's not willing to do that, I'm not willing to play with them. Because did anyone see 2020 coming? Anybody see 2008 coming? Anybody see 2000 coming? No, none of us did. It just, things happen sometimes, and I don't want to get caught.
Bill,
yeah.
You did say that you're 60.
Yeah.
You have a 40-year option. Do you have an
assignable clause in there? Yes. The question is, I'm 60. What she's saying is I'm old. She says a 40-year option, so I'll probably be dead. And can I assign this to someone else? Yes, because it's my heirs, of which Kim and I don't have kids. Volunteers? Yeah, we have a lot of these options. Yeah, I bet. And I call it a protection option. And so if you have an option, again, let's say you have a rental that's free and clear, and you go to a financial friend and you sell them an option for $500 to buy your property one day. Let's say the property is worth $200,000 and you sell your financial friend an option to buy it at $150,000 sometime in the next 20 years. Down the road, you get sued. And you just give up the property to whoever sues you. Just take the property. Here you go. Do you see that they get the property subject to this option? Who wants to do that lawsuit when someone can come and just take the property back from them? So that's a way to do that. Yes, sir. Say it one more time, please. Yeah. Yep.
And they say they don't know. Maybe forever.
Well, no, we're going to have some time. So the question was, let's say someone wants to do a strategic option, and I say, when do you want to sell by? They say, well, I don't know, maybe forever. That's not an option. I can't say forever in the option. We're going to have some type of timeline. Okay. If we can't do that, then the option is the wrong tool. Let's go to something else.
Okay. Is there a limit on how long
you can rent an option? Is there not that I know of. Okay. My longest I've done is 60 years. Yeah. But again, the lady up here, if I said 40 years and she was nervous about me, if I said 60 years, she's going to lose her mind. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question on the asset protection.
Yes, ma'am.
Would you put that on your personal property?
I did it on my personal property. The ranch was free and clear, and we put it on the market, and it's free and clear, and we have horses, and people die on horses. And so I made sure I had to wipe out the free and clear, and so I went to a financial friend of mine, and not only did I get a HELOC from my financial friend, for $800,000. I also sold him an option on the property. And I think he could have bought it for $200,000. That really wiped that. That's a title you don't want to get into. Yes, sir.
So when you're doing that asset protection option, other than it being your friend, is there anything from
exercising that option? So you want to keep the property and have a friend. But the question is, so I have a friend who I've given an option to. And let's say I have the $500,000 house. He has an option to buy it for $200,000. Does anything prevent him from just exercising the option and just taking my house for $200,000 because we get in a fight? Probably the buyback option that I have on his option. And y'all saw that work. So, yeah, he can exercise, but as soon as he does. And I also probably have a right of first refusal. A right of first refusal is not an option, but in the language it's probably a right of first refusal. So, understand what you're dealing with when you're dealing with me. I'm a handshake guy. Think of it. What animal would you be if you're an animal? An eagle? What would you be? Michaela. It's not Michaela. Say it again. It is Michaela? Derek Dombeck, who's one of my best friends, his daughter is named Michaela. She's 15 years old, and she's working on her second deal, and she's taken down 14 deer. One shot. She's had 14 deer and 14 shots. And her dad takes her picture down every time she kills another deer and puts it in the bar. So his daughter's picture, 15 years old, is in a bar in Wisconsin. I think that's just great. What a good man. What a great dad. Wait, let me finish this. So what was I saying? What animal would you be? A wolf. I'd be a porcupine. A porcupine, slow. Not very bright. Can't see. Can't smell. Slow. So this is all me. Anybody mess with a porcupine? You do not. Maybe once. But you're going to walk away with a face full of quills. I'm that guy. I don't want to be a wolf or an eagle. I'm a porcupine. I just go along and eating bugs, and just all of a sudden you go mess with me, I ball up, and you're going to come back with all these quills on you. It doesn't mean I have to use my quills. It means I can use my quills. Someone had a question? Yes, sir. No. I said that I gave my friend a $200,000. He had the option to buy my property for $200,000, and I had a HELOC from him also against the property because I owned it, and it was for $800,000 on a $500,000 property.
You sold it for $300,000.
No, because at closing the option was released and the HELOC, which was at zero, was satisfied. So they came out of the way. Good question, though. That was good. No, I've not been asked that question. So parts of an option. You have an optionor. That's the person, the givor. Yes, sir.
How would you word an option if it was to be executed upon their death from buying from
heirs and or heirs, assigns, heirs?
No, I'm saying as the wording. You cannot execute the option until they pass away.
I'm going to go with a different thing. There's different kind of deeds that you can use for that.
Okay
so a life estate. Yeah, and I let me not get into that now. Let me just stay with more of the plain vanilla stuff. So an optionor is the giver of the option, the owner of the property. The optionee is the takee of the option, usually me. Another part is time. I want to have that option to go as long as possible if I can. I want extension language built into there at all times. And good example is I gave someone, I put a new roof on a house in 2004. So I saw a house, had a tarp, I stopped, I knocked on the door. Remember Matthew 7:7? Knock and the door shall be open. So I knocked on the door. God said knock on the door. I did. And I said, why do you have a blue tarp? We ended up talking, and I put a new roof on their house in exchange for an option to buy their property one day. And it was a 5-year option. So in 2004, the price was here on the house. In 2009, when that option came due, what had happened to the value of the property? It was down here. I didn't want to exercise it because it had been stupid. But I had extension language built into it. So I could extend the option by giving the owner $1,000. It would be applied toward the strike price. And I could do that twice. So I could get to 2009, 2014, and 2019. I kept able to push that to make sure that I'm not going to be stuck in a trough somewhere. And the consideration, again, it can be cash, but it doesn't have to be cash. And there's going to be a strike price in there. And a strike price just means here's the price we've agreed to. Sometimes it's a number. Sometimes it's a formula. The then balance of the mortgage. So here's the old post office. Yes, sir. So what happens if they decide they want to sell or they want to refinance? Can they do it? Yes, they can. But let's say someone buys that house and I don't know about it. You know, they go to the kitchen table, no attorneys involved, but they just go to the kitchen table and deed transfers. Whoever bought the property, has anything happened to my option?
No. Nope.
They bought it subject to my option.
Yep.
I'm still in control. Okay? So that's going to be But if someone needs to refinance, I don't know if you'd look at the options, but look at them. You'll see my phone numbers all over them. These are things in the courthouse. So when the deed dogs are looking this stuff up, they see me. They think I'm a lender. So they call me and say, we need to have the payoff on this loan. That's the question I've always been asked every time. What is the payoff on this loan? It's not a loan. It's an option. But all they see is a security deed, so they assume, because that's all they ever see is, that's what makes options so good. No one knows what they're even dealing with, not even deed dogs. Anyway, so this is the old post office in Adairsville.
So, Bill, if they wanted to buy your interest, what do you sell that?
In other words, they want to buy my option back, and that's what normally happens. I've exercised two options since 1999. Two. What normally happens is someone calls and they want to sell, or they don't want me to buy their property back. Something like that happens, and then the question is, how badly do you want to buy the property back? How badly do you not want me to exercise? How badly do you want the loan? And so they can buy me out, or I can take my option and put it behind the new mortgage. I can do a lot of different things. Do they have another property? And I'll walk the mortgage, which is securing the option, to another property. There's lots I can do. Talk to me. Everything involves me getting face-to-face over a cup of coffee. Let's talk. And we'll fix anything. We can fix anything. Yes, ma'am.
Do you find that people don't want to sign the option, especially with an extension?
Do I find people that don't want to sign an option? I want you to watch this deal, then you tell me. Okay? So in this case, Mike at Unity Bank, who is a banker there in Adairsville, and he ran the bank, he called me up, and he was very nervous. His job was on the line. This was around 2011 or 2012. Mike had made a loan to Tom, and Mike had made a $128,000 loan at 7 or 8% interest to Tom, and it was secured against antiques that Tom had in his store. Now, this is a small town. It was a handshake thing, but now we're in trouble, and Tom can't pay. Unity Bank has been taken over by Bank of the Ozarks, and Mike is about to lose his job. And this was one of the big bad reasons why. So there's an unsecured note. He also, Mike had made a loan so Tom could buy a truck. And both of these loans were badly in arrears. So Tom's overall situation was, there was a first mortgage on the post office from Wick Jarrett, who's a friend of mine. And he was in hospice care at the time. He was trying to clear things up, and Tom was behind to him, but he held the mortgage on the old post office. So private money. The bank loan, he was paying $2,588 a month. The truck loan, $560 a month, but the balance was only $693. But the thing was, Tom couldn't pay. That nut for those three things was almost $4,000 a month, and Tom couldn't sell that many antiques. Nobody was buying antiques. And he'd used all his money, tried everything he could. He's a good man, but he's just sunk. And he said, I'm about to file bankruptcy. He told Mike that, and then Mike called me and said, can you go help? Because when banks can't help, that's when we as investors can help. So here's some additional information. Dykes Botiford had called me and said, hey, listen, I've got some money sitting. If you have a place to put it, I'd appreciate it if you could help me. I didn't have any money. All my money was out. It was loaned out. I had no money. Nothing to do this deal with. But I love to own this property someday. I liked the property. It's in the little bitty town of Adairsville where our ranch was, which has one stoplight. I love this place. I wanted this building. No money. So here's the solution. Dykes agreed to loan because the guy's total debt was about $45,000, something like that. That was his total debt, but he was making payments of almost $4,000. His loan constant was crazy high, so he needed to redo the loan constant. So Dykes loaned $65,000 at 13%. Is he happy?
Yeah.
Better than having his money sit in the bank.
Yeah.
15 years with a call built into the note. Tom, we dropped his mortgage payment from $4,000 a month to $830. Was that able to help him tremendously? And we paid off the building, the truck loan, and the bank loan. And Mike looked like a hero, and he was able to keep his job. Mike did not get fired. And I got a pure option to buy a $160,000 property for $120,000 sometime in the next 7 years. And we were at the trough at the bottom. What was going to happen to this property if we came out of the bottom? It would be a lot more than 160, but I still am locked in at 120. How much money do I have in this deal? Thank you. And when I helped Mike, Mike called his other banker friends and said, call Bill. And I went to work. So So I'm able to help bankers. I'm able to do what they can't do. And this wasn't a Dodd-Frank thing because it's a commercial building. So solution. Oh, I already did this. So here's the closing. This is the HUD one. And you can see on arrow number one, that's the payoff to Mr. Jarrett on the property. And so he's getting his $16,000. He's happy. Then on line 110, you have the payoff to Ozarks of $36,000. That was on the $100,000 loan with payments of almost $3,000. Then the second Ozark loan was for $693. That was the rest of the truck. And finally, oh, that was it. And then finally down below, you see the loan that he got on line 202, which was $65,000. But I was able to help and solve a problem, but in return, I got an option to buy this property at some point in the future with extension language built in. Someone had a question? Yes, sir. The post office. So the bank or the Wick Jarrett's note was paid off, so it's now a free and clear property. Dykes' loan goes into place at $65,000, and the property is worth about $160,000. Do you think he felt pretty secure? He sure did. Another thing to know about this, options are not a loan. You have to always remember that. You're not loaning somebody money. So what Dykes did here was a loan, but my option was not a loan. There was the consideration fee was I fixed the problem for him. Consideration doesn't need to be cash. We talked about that. And if I give someone cash, let's say I give them $10,000, and that $10,000 will be applied toward the purchase price one day when I buy the property, or if I buy the property, that $10,000 to the person I give it to is not taxable because the event hasn't happened yet. So it will only be taxable once the property, I exercise my option and buy it, or I don't buy it and the option dissolves. That's when it becomes a taxable $10,000. So again, this is not a loan. They're getting $10,000. It's their money. If I were to buy an option on your house and I gave you $10,000 option consideration, okay, that is not taxable money. And I'm not a tax expert. I'm not a lawyer. But anyway, that's not taxable money until the option expires or I exercise my option and buy it. That's when we look and say, now that money counts, because we don't know how it's going to be applied. Because if it's your personal residence, and you're under a 121 unit, a 121 rule, there's no tax still.
And can I ask about the post office? So he still owned it.
He still owned it, and he had it rented to two people. It's his house. He had two tenants inside, and he took care of everything.
He was just happy that...
He went from $4,000 a month to $830. He could afford
$830.
I got an option. Dykes is happy. He's getting 13%. I did not. Another story. If y'all want to, I'm going to be in the bookstore a lot this weekend. So if y'all want to, a lot of these stories have additional stories after them, come to me afterwards. But I did not exercise.
You played the helper in that situation.
Yes. Yes. And this probably got resolved last year, by the way. Let me keep moving just a little bit. Was I done with this one? Yeah, option is not a loan. Consideration, we talked about that. No tax consideration. What happens when an option is exercised? I go to them, I call them on the phone or write them a letter and say I'm ready to exercise the option. And normally, they're like, okay, and we're ready to buy the house. A lot of times this is on rental property or commercial property, and I don't get much feedback or pushback, but if I do, let's have a cup of coffee and let's talk it through. Tell me what we can do differently. I'm always willing. If you want to hear the story that happened on our ranch, because when a year later, when he owed me $197,900, he didn't have it.
He didn't
sell his house? No, he sold his house.
The other house.
He sold his house.
Did
some outbuildings on my ranch. But a year later, he did not have the $197,900. Come to the bookstore. I'll tell you what happened next. And then that went on for another 2 years, and then he didn't have the money again. Come find out what happened. It's pretty neat. I'll bring my computer with me. Y'all can see the documents. What happens if the exercise is not? What happens if the option is not exercised? It expires. If I gave them cash for consideration, they have to consider it taxable. I'm out, and that can be a loss to me because it went into a deal that never happened, but that was money I put toward trying to get a house. So it can be a write-off to me, but it's income or whatever, however that property is set up, it's that's to them. And options can be used to escape drudgery. And you really kind of saw that with Cox Farm. The guy hated tenants. Now, in this case, it was me working one side of it. But when I have rental properties I don't want to take care of, do you see that I can sell the property to somebody else? Let them have it. Let them have the tax benefits. But I have an option to buy it back at some point in the future. Okay? Yes, sir.
How do you keep track of all the options?
Believe it or not, pen and paper. Bob will tell you that I'm so bad on tech. It's just, he laughs at me. Bob is so smart, and Bob is so good, and he has systems, and Bob is everything I hope to be one day when I grow up. Yes?
Bill, you showed us all these legal documents. Were these all produced by your attorney?
No, me. Me. I'm dyslexic severely. So I don't read and write very well. But Jack Miller taught us that on a contract, so like on a security deed, you don't know what's in your mortgage, take a ruler and read the first line. And then on a pad of paper next to it, write what it says in English. Next line, do the same thing. And sometimes it takes you 4 or 5 sentences to make 10 words make sense. And you got to do a lot of lookup, a lot of phone calls. When you're done, you have the document in English of what it means. Then you can look and say, okay, what does this do? Then you can list down all the things the document does. Now comes the best part. Then you say, what doesn't it, where does it not limit me?
But you're producing your own legal
documents. Yes.
You have them reviewed
my deals.
By an attorney.
I had them reviewed by my attorney, absolutely. Let me go just for a few more minutes. Again, I'll take any questions when I'm done, but I want to get as much of this done as I can. Important things to know, let's see. An option is a bet. The owner is betting I will not exercise the option, and I'm betting that I will. So that's really all this is a sort of bet. I had said this earlier, but if I'm working with someone, the hair on the back of my neck stands up, there is no way I'm doing that deal. You know, y'all see me tease Anita like I did last night. How do y'all think I feel about her? No, I don't like her. I love her. I love Anita. If I don't love someone, I don't tease them, I don't talk to them, I just stay away from them. Okay? But if Anita called me up tomorrow and said, you know, I need $200,000 for this deal, I'm all in. I'll have $1,000 of it. I'll go to Bob for the other $199,900, and we'll do the deal together. State laws control options. So, yes, you want to have anything you do controlled by or reviewed by an attorney. And so, you know, Avina and I do ultimate deal structuring every February. We'll do it in Tampa. It's a 3-day seminar. And we look at individual deal structures on certain type of tools, 7 or 8 of them. One of them is subject to deals. You'll see that today at 3:30 when we talk about it. Another one we cover is options. So we have all the documents there and what we do. And you see how we're both doing options and we're doing them differently. Our paperwork's a little bit different. But that's what you see. So that's what makes ultimate creative deal structuring so good. Jack Miller said, pay people to do things for you, but don't pay them to think for you. So when you ask me about the documents, my attorney is to review my documents to make sure I'm legal. But my attorney doesn't speak the language of creative deal structuring. He's not sat in the classes I've sat in. He's not there to tell me how to do my deals. He's to tell me how can I do the deals where I stay within the white lines. And I like to use options to capture the benefits I like most, and I use options to get rid of the benefits I like least. Important things to know. Let's see, leverage is an amplifier. So when you are borrowing money, and remember, an option is a form of a leverage, right? It's a leveraging instrument. It leverages. But it's going to leverage when you do good deals. But when you do a bad deal, it leverages that as well. So a bad deal becomes really a lot worse, and a good deal becomes better. And I like options best because we hold a lot of them, which means I control a lot of property in my little 5-mile circle in Bartow County. And these are people who did not want to sell their property. I would not have these options or this ability if I had not learned how to use options. Because this feels impossible because most of them did not want to sell. It did not involve the big damn hammer. So the difference between debt financing, which is what you're used to, and options, which is the form of equity financing, is with debt financing, it's a claim on your future earnings. And equity financing is a claim on future gains. So when I get an option from somebody, all I'm doing is I'm betting I can get, there's going to be gain with that property. I'm going to capture that gain. That's what they're giving up. But they're not going to give up future earnings. So last one I'm going to do is this is somebody who wanted a boat. And with this property, the owner, this was last year, this was last April or May, and the owner was all set to buy a boat. He had been renting boats on Lake Altoona, and he wanted to have his own boat for his family. He had a 9-year-old, an 11-year-old, wanted a ski boat, you know, the speakers and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he knew he had his kids for maybe 4 more years, 5 more years, and he wanted family time on the lake and not to go rent some stinking pontoon boat on Lake Altoona. And he was all set to buy it. He was approved for the loan, and then COVID hit. He got laid off, and guess what the bank couldn't do? No loan. So the bank called me up and said, can you go meet with this very nice man? Here's the T-bar. He wants a boat. Time slipping by. He wants to spend time with his family. So this is me sitting at the kitchen table, did a T-bar, and I'm just listing down what his current situation is. Then I sit back and say, all you have to do is say yes. All you have to do is say yes. All you have to do is say yes. Thank you. All you have to do is say yes. And you're going to get the ski boat. So here's how we structured it out. The home was worth $225,000. That's the fair market value. He's the one that told it to me. He knows his house. That's what it's worth. So I said, if you give me the right to buy your house sometime in the next 10 years for $225,000, so is there any equity here right now? No. This is the value of the house. So everything until this day, he's going to get all that equity. So whatever his note balance is, that's all his. And I said, if you'll give me an option, I'll give you a boat in exchange. I'll give you a boat that you want, that you like, that you decide on, the boat's yours. And what he's looking at is, I get to go spend the summer with my kids on the lake, family time. This means a lot to him. So that's what he wants. That's what he really wanted. And I said, if I don't buy your house, he said, what happens if you don't exercise the option in the 10 years? I said, you owe me nothing. Remember, it's not a loan. He owes me nothing back. And he loved it. He said, so you may not even exercise the option. I said, I may not. Or I may. And I said, and here's what we'll do. When I buy it, if I exercise the option and I buy your house, one day I'm going to sell that house. Don't know when, but one day I'll sell that house. And when I do, everything above 225, we will split 25-75. You'll get 75% of the upside, and I'll get 25% of the upside. Fair? Yeah, that was fair to me. So then I went door knocking, because remember, God says, knock and the door shall be. And so I went, that was about a mile and a half away. I found this house. It was for sale, by the way. I put an offer in on it. There was going to be closing in a week, so it was a backup offer. See the ski boat? And the mom said, I asked about the ski boat. So they're getting ready to move. Their kids had moved out. They're going to college. The youngest had already gone to college. Boat had been sitting there for 2 years unused, and she wanted that to go away. And so the deal I made was, she said, if you'll make this thing go away before we move. It was a $15,000 boat. She told me what it was worth. She goes, I'll take $3,000, make it go away. I took a picture of it because we undid the cover, and I took a picture of it to the guy who wanted the boat, and I said, how about this? Oh, yes. I took my truck over. I hooked up the boat. I brought it back over to him, and we looked at it. He goes, oh, yes, I want that boat. That's going to be a perfect boat. Speakers, this is great. He didn't know what I paid for it. He just knew he was getting a boat. And so the owner gave me a 10-year option to purchase. I secured it with the deed of trust, just like you've seen me do. And the strike price is $210,000 because remember, his house was worth $225,000. We agreed the boat was worth $18,000. So that came off the strike, his $225,000. So my new strike price is $210,000. And the house appreciates at 3% per year. In 10 years, it's worth $303,000. So the equity would be $93,000 total in 10 years. And this is if I exercise the option and turn around and sold it right away, not if I hold it longer. And so he'll make $70,000 and I'd make $23,000 and my yield is 20%. Anybody right now getting 20% on their money? And where do you think the $3,000 came from? My Roth IRA. So all this will dump into the Roth. Okay, my name is Bill Cook. I'm going to give you my phone number. I don't coach and I don't mentor. I do answer my phone. I only have one phone number. I don't have a Google phone. Do not text me and ask you if you can call me. Just call me. I wake up at 4. I go to bed at 8:30. My name is Bill Cook. My phone number is 770-815-8727. If you're working on a deal, you're unsure about things, please give me a phone call. I'll be in the bookstore a lot this weekend, so come over there if you want to hear about other things or if you have a deal you're working on, I'll be happy to. Thank you for your time. It's great having you guys here. Appreciate it. And get with those other speakers. There's a lot of great speakers here. So make sure you're hitting a lot of classes and get to know each other. I'm Eastern Time. Well, no, I live in a motorhome. This winter, I'll be down. Next weekend, I move to Florida. I'll be there for about 5 months, 4 months. Yep. Who?